great to see everyone after this Thanksgiving, and we're happy to see the visitors here with us. This morning, normally, you know, around Thanksgiving, we kind of take note of the things we should be thankful for, and this morning, we'll kind of take the counter of that in our text this morning that we're going to follow in the lesson as to exactly who we're thanking. Our text is going to come from Romans 1:18 through 23 this morning. A Sunday school teacher asked her class what they were thankful for one day. One little boy said, "My glasses." When asked why he was thankful for his glasses, he said, "Because they keep the boys from fighting me and the girls from kissing me." You know, this is the season of, you know, Thanksgiving, and we need to be thankful to God for everything that He has given us and everything He has done for us and will do in the future. Large and small blessings alike, significant and seemingly insignificant. We need to be thankful to our God. Many years ago, I had my eyes examined, you know, by the eye doctor, and, you know, I complained about my poor eyesight. They said, "Oh, you know, our eyes are not bad at all. We have many foreign students come in for an exam, and most of them have far worse eyesight than you. They're extremely nearsighted to the point where it's almost uncorrectable for them." Well, I didn't complain after that because, you know, mine was still easily correctable from that point. So, do we even have a speck of an idea of how blessed we are to have been born and raised in America today? And decent eyesight is probably just, you know, one of those many blessings. We know that, you know, diet can affect that greatly. And a lot of people don't have the diet that we do. So we need to have God wake us up and shake us up about this and many of the other blessings that we have in life. Let's read our text before we do get too far, Romans chapter 1, verse 18 through 23. "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For His invisible attributes, namely His eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world, and the things that have been made. So they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor Him as God or give thanks to Him, but they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools, and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and the reptiles." You know, many years ago, I think at least the older people remember the actress Helen Hayes. And she was going to cook her first turkey. Before she served it up, she announced to her husband, Charles MacArthur, and their son, James, "Now, I know this is the first turkey I've ever cooked. If it isn't right, I don't want anybody to say a word at all. We'll just get up from the table without any comments, and we'll go out and eat dinner." Then she went to the kitchen and started preparing her turkey. When she entered the dining room, bearing the turkey on a platter, she found that her husband and son were seated at the table, already wearing their hats and coats. You know, we're so blessed with good food that we don't know it, good restaurants, and the money to be able to eat well, whether at home or otherwise. We need to be thankful, because there are people starving out in the world. You know, we've helped out, and you know, even with all the help that's given, they need a whole lot more help. So, the text this morning in Romans that we read reveals the sin of ingratitude and how terrible it is in God's mind. The first thing this morning is that it angers God. Romans 1:18 through 19 tells us that the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against the wickedness of those of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness. Many today seek to suppress the truth, and it seems that here lately that the atheist community, the non-believers of that stripe, have raised their head again in order to diminish our faith and destroy faith in a lot of people. The wrath of God, or the anger, is a subject that many like to avoid in church. They only like the white poofy clouds and the nice stuff and all that, and And there certainly is, if you're on the right side of God, there are wonderful things that we can talk about. But we need to acknowledge that that does exist, that the wrath of God does exist. Psalm 7:11 tells us, God is a righteous judge, a God who expresses His wrath every day. Psalm 7:11. God expresses His wrath every day to those who disobey Him. Or again, in Psalm 38, verse 1. Psalm 38, verse 1 tells us, O Lord, do not rebuke me in your anger or discipline me in your wrath. Now, we all make mistakes. We all fall short of the glory of God. As Paul said, if we say we're not a sinner, then we make Jesus out to be a liar because He said He came to save us from our sins. We are saved from His wrath if we'll get underneath that cleansing blood of Christ. So we don't want that rebuke or that wrath because we know how mighty God is. You know, what is it that God thinks of you and I? The Bible tells us that the earth is His footstool. So think about that. You think about their culture, the foot was not something very appealing. It was generally pretty dirty because they had open sandals. Even today in the Middle East, if you cross your leg and you show your heel to the person next to you, that's an insult because you're saying you're lower than the dirt on the heel of my shoe. So, as insignificant as this earth is in this great vast universe that we can see and the things we can't see, God still sent His Son to save us. So, why does God get angry at mankind? It's a question many people ask. Because He's righteous and we are not. Because He is holy and we are not. Job 37 and verse 23, the Almighty is beyond our reach and exalted in power. In His justice and great righteousness, He does not oppress. Now, God does not oppress unjustly. In other words, if a person is punished for some reason, it's a just punishment. But God is perfect and righteous in every way, and we cannot measure up to that. The only time that we measured up was when Adam and Eve were innocent in the garden. But they chose not to listen to God. And each and every one of us makes that same choice in our lives when we get old enough. And we know that without Christ, we can't be saved. We can't be perfect. So God is beyond our reach. His holiness, His righteousness, we can't conceive fully. We cannot even begin to touch the hem of His garment. We can't begin to imagine how holy and perfect He is. Isaiah saw the holy God and exclaimed, Woe to me, I am ruined. For I am man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty. Isaiah was very troubled about coming into God's presence, about seeing God and knowing that, how unclean he was. He realized that. People don't realize that today. People say, well, I didn't kill anybody. I didn't rob a bank. I didn't murder anybody. I didn't steal from that. I didn't take candy from a baby or anything like that. And that makes me a good person. Well, it's all good attributes. I'm glad that you haven't done any of those things. But it does not measure up to what God is. Wonder what we would explain if God came in our presence right now. Will we tremble and fall on the ground and wait for the end? We'd be greatly humbled. He is righteous, but often we're not in our lives. If you turn to James chapter 1, James chapter 1, verses 19 and 20. My dear brothers, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. For man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires. Kind of seems sometimes, especially at this season, we're all doing about the opposite. We're not very quick to listen. We're not very slow to speak. And we're not very slow to become angry. That does not bring about what God wants in our lives. We need to as Paul did, to buffet his body, to brace it against what life tries to throw at us. Whatever life tries to throw at us, we need to always try to maintain our righteousness in God. Many times, our anger and wrath is not justified, but God's is. Many times, we just get mad because we didn't get what we wanted. Or things didn't go the way we wanted. But God gets angry because He is just, holy, and pure. When God is a jealous God, He's a jealous God because there are no other gods. Yet people try to make other gods and worship other gods and not worship Him. Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 and 27. In Genesis 1, starting in verse 26, then God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in His own image. In the image of God He created him. Male and female He created them. So that sounds great. We were made in God's image. Not what we see in the mirror, but a likeness of His image. It probably means intellectual and spiritual likeness, certainly the power to rise far above that of animal life. Now, a lot of people out there try to tell you there's some animals that are they're just different from us, but they're just as intelligent. They think and they have a conscience and all that kind of stuff, but no one's ever been able to prove that. If we skip over a few pages to Genesis 6, verses 5 through 8, we see a whole different thing unfolding here in Genesis 6, verses 5 through 8. "The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of his thoughts and his heart were only on evil continually." Man did not take a break from these bad thoughts. Verse 6, "And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, man and animal and creeping things and birds of the heavens. For I am sorry that I have made them." But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. One man and his family found favor in the eyes of his Lord that he sought to carry on with man. And yet here we stand at another time, another place, when there's probably many more millions, if not billions, of people that were at that time. And so few people like Noah who will honor God with their lips, with their actions, and with their belief. It's amazing to me to think that God created man in His image, and yet in just a short time, mankind had gone downhill and had deteriorated to the point where he thought of only evil all the time, not God. God was not in their eye. But God had mercy on one man and his family. Romans 1:18, the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness of men. God's wrath will come. God is patient and long-suffering. He wants everyone to come to a knowledge of Him. And we should pray that everyone on this earth, no matter how evil they are, that they might have a long life, that they might live long enough to change their life. When life is cut short, then the judgment. And the longer these people live, then maybe we can reach them. We need to pray for all of them. Remember, we hate the sin. We don't hate the sinner. But we love and care for everyone and want them to come to the same knowledge and joy that we have in Christ. So it's been revealed, God's wrath throughout history, and it's continuing to be revealed. But God has mercy on those who believe in Him and His Son Jesus and obey their commandments. Now, a little bit further in our text, in verse 21 especially, we learn of man's ingratitude. "For although they knew God, they neither glorified God nor gave thanks to Him." Now, you know, a lot of people out there, even atheists, they kind of know that things weren't just thrown together and in the soupy mix of the cosmos, and a few lightning strikes and stuff like that made man and everything that we see here. They know deep inside, but they disobey and they don't want to believe. How foolish it is not to glorify God as the Almighty, to not give Him credit for being the creator of everything that we see and that we don't see. He is and always will be. And how foolish it is not to be thankful to the God who created you and me, each of us individually, sustains us and saves us. It's kind of like biting the hand that feeds you. You know, that happens sometimes. Or slapping the face that saves you. One time a young boy was walking down the street with his mother, and they met a neighbor on the street returning home with a bag of groceries. The kindly neighbor gave the boy an orange, and the mother said to her son, "And what do you say to the nice man?" Looking at the man, the boy held out the orange and said, "Peel it." You ever know a kid like that? You know, sometimes maybe we've seen a kid like that, or even perhaps an adult like that. You know, I know a lot of people, someone gave them a fish, and you know, the first thing they said, "You're not going to clean it for me? I don't want it if you haven't cleaned it for me." Or maybe a nation like that. It sounds sometimes like what America sounds to maybe some of us. We already have everything and want everything more without giving thanks for what we've already been given. You know, even the poorest in our nation, not to say that they don't have their struggles, but I think like 60% have a house. A great many have multiple cars. A great many of them have air conditioning. A great many of them have cable and DVDs and video games and stuff. And not to say that times aren't hard for some people compared to other people, but we truly are blessed with so much that the rest of the world doesn't have. I think it would be a great awakening if we saw some of the poverty that's out there. I heard a joke one time. A hippie couple was strolling down the street, and he said to his traveling companion, "I'm going over to pick up my unemployment check, then I'll drop by the university to see what's holding up my check for my federal education grant. Then I'll pick up my food stamps. Meanwhile, you go over to the free clinic and check your test. Pick up those new glasses at the health center, then go to the welfare department and apply for an increase in our eligibility limit. Then I'll meet you at 5 o'clock at the federal building for the mass demonstration against this rotten establishment." You know, it's amazing how jaded we get and how blessed we are. There's people that actually do this today. And why wouldn't this make someone angry? Could it be that God our Father has been so good to us and yet we fail to show our gratitude in the way we live? How truly blessed we are? And to share those blessings with others who are less fortunate as we can. So what does God's anger have to do with ingratitude? Is not ingratitude a sin? Are we not truly blessed? You know, if a person's unhappy with their life, then aren't they unhappy with what God has given them? Now, I'm not talking about if you want to better your life, do something better, and try to provide better for your family that you don't get an education, but you're still happy for what God has given you and the opportunity that you may present itself for you to be able to do better for your family. Andrew Carnegie, the multimillionaire, left $1 million to one of his relatives, who in return cursed Carnegie because he had left $365 million to public charities and had cut him off with just one measly million. Now you think about it. Now it was Carnegie's to do what he would with it. But the guy looked at the glasses as half empty, when you should have seen it as $1 million full. So we do get jaded sometimes, and we need to be careful. Could it be that we're all been so blessed that we just don't see it any other way? We take everything for granted. I don't recall who said this, but they said something to the effect that I'll never lift a glass of water to my lips without giving thanks. That should humble us all and remind us to be thankful for all things. That we can actually lift a glass of clean water from out the tap in our house, not having to travel to a stream miles away, not having to boil it, not having to take a chance on getting sick by it. Someone said, not only count your blessings, but also consider the source. Also, don't count your blessings without praising the blesser. Someone else suggested, perhaps we should change our prayers. Perhaps we should wake up in the morning and ask, Dear Lord, is there anything I can do for you today? It is a sin, and it's foolish not to be thankful for God for the life that we have, the breath, and everything else that we have. Consider the source of life. Now, this winter, we'll spend a lot of time trying to keep rodents out of our house. They want to live with us where it's nice and warm. And then during the rest of the time, we're trying to keep the bugs and other things out of our house. So we're kind of used to trying to get rid of some of the life out there. But when you think of the amazing fact that we even have life at all, the atheists and the scientists will say that life came from an inanimate object, that you could take an element and create life. But the one thing that they've never been able to do. They can tell you, oh, we think life came from this soupy mix of this and that and these acids and this and that. One lightning strike and life started. Well, friend, I've seen a lot of lightning storms, and I know you've seen a lot of lightning storms, and I bet you never seen an odd form of life come out of one of those lightning storms. What the scientist cannot do, he cannot take what he says life came from. He can't put it in a sterile test tube. He can't put all those chemicals in there. He can't light a little lightning on it and create life. He can't even take a living cell and with a sterile needle pierce that cell and let those chemicals come out of it. Those are the molecules of life. Those are the actual molecules of life and actually create life. We rely in our food sources that no new life springs up. When we open up a jar of peanut butter, we hope that there's not only no mold on that, but there's not some little critter in there blinking at us that no one's ever seen in their life. And every thousands and millions of times in our food source, there's opportunities for new life to spring up, and it never has. And they can't create life. The atheist says, show me God, show me life. Make it, create it. I'll even let you use some stuff that was already living. And they can't do it. The breath of life is something no one can duplicate but God. And as we live and breathe this morning, we need to be thankful that we have a God and a Creator who didn't give up on us, who stuck with us, even as bad as it got during Noah's time, even as bad as it got through the times whenever they got taken away into captivity. Even as bad as we are sometimes, that God is there, willing to forgive us. And that's our greatest thanks this morning. Thanks for Jesus. As we partake of the Lord's Supper, let us always think that we live and breathe only because of Jesus and only because of their love. So, not a spirit of ingratitude, but a spirit of gratitude this morning is what we need. I don't know if you've taken those first steps to come underneath that umbrella that God provides for us through the blood of Christ, or maybe you have need of the church in some other way. Whatever it may be, won't you come as we stand and sing the song of invitation.